Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Barhayate te nayane naranam Lingani Vishnur nani rakshitoye Hado nirnam thao druma janma bajao Shetrani nanu vrajato hadirjao Symbolic representations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His forms, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock, and the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like the trunk of trees. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Especially for the householder devotees, the path of deity worship is strongly recommended. As far as possible, every householder, by the direction of the spiritual master, must install the deity of Vishnu forms like Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan or Sitaram, especially, or any other form of the Lord like Narasingha, Varaha, Gurni, Tai, Matsya, Kurma, Shalagram, Shila, and many other forms of Vishnu, like Trivikram, Keshava, Achyuta, Vasudev, Narayan, and Damodar, as recommended in the Vaishnav Tantras or Puranas. And one's family should worship strictly according to the directions of the regulations of Archana Vidhi. Any member of the family who is above 12 years of age should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, and all the members of the household should be engaged in the daily service of the Lord, beginning from the morning 4 a.m. till night 10 p.m., by performing Mangalarti, Niranjana, Archana, Puja, Kirtan, Sringar, Bhoga, Vaikali, Sandhya, Arti, Pata, Bhoga at night, and Shayan, Arti, etc. Engagement in such worship of the deity under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master will greatly help the householders to purify their very existence and make rapid progress in spiritual knowledge. Simple theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient for a neophyte devotee. Book knowledge is theoretical, whereas the archana process is practical. Spiritual knowledge must be developed by a combination of theoretical and practical knowledge, and that is the guaranteed way for attainment of spiritual perfection. The training of devotional service for a neophyte devotee completely depends on the expert spiritual master who knows how to lead the disciple to make gradual progress toward the path back home, back to Godhead.
We are very grateful to have His Holiness Bhakti Charan Swami Maharaj with us today. The two of us were speaking together for quite some time when I asked him which verse he would like to speak on for Srimad Bhagavatam, and he insisted he would not give class. He insisted, in fact he ordered me, that I must give class. Which took me by great surprise. So I asked Govinda Prabhu to find a verse, and he selected this verse. about 5 minutes ago. Wouldn't you rather hear Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj give class? Whoever specifically wants to hear Bhakti Charu Maharaj give class, please loudly chant Hari Bol. Much louder, please. Srila Prabhupada said we emphasize things by repeating three times. So just to not disobey his order, I will say something. There is the book Bhagavat, and there is the person Bhagavat. So I will speak something about a particular person Bhagavat. Srila Prabhupada, his first meeting with Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he understood who he was and what he could do. When Srila Prabhupada first met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, immediately he told him, you should take the message of Lord Chaitanya and teach it all over the world in the English language. When Srila Prabhupada first met with Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, he gave him the order, you should translate all of my books in the Bengali language. Which is very significant because Bengali is the original language of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. The language Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Gadadhar, Srivas, Advaita, Haridas Thakur, they all spoke in this language. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, Narottam Das Thakur's songs are all in Bengali language. What an awesome instruction this is. And within about a year, Srila Prabhupada gave him first initiation, second initiation, and sannyas initiation. And he has translated all of Prabhupada's books. Like Prabhupada, he would wake up around midnight and translate, and then do preaching and organizing and inspiring devotees throughout the day. And knowing how important media is for influencing people in today's world, he expressed his pure love for Srila Prabhupada through making Srila Prabhupada's life and teachings accessible to common people in the form of the Abhay Charan film series. And he travels around the world. Wherever I go, any temple, any home practically, I hear CDs of Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj singing in his very melodious devotional voice. His profound grasp of our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and practical realization. That is why he is so popular wherever he goes throughout the world. His Vaishnava etiquette, his gentleness, his humility, his wonderful preaching has sincerely affected thousands and thousands of hearts with Prabhupada's mercy. So we are very grateful that he has come. And now that I have followed your order by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, we now request Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj to sit on this, to transfer to this seat.
You give the class and then I'll speak.
To speak anything you like. Whatever remnants you have. You should sit here.
No. You keep sitting.
No. People will sit here.
Where are you going?
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. What to do now? I've been put on the spot and Maharaj left the scene. Of course, he said that he's going to come back in 3 minutes. Actually, yesterday only I decided to come. I just got back to India a couple of days ago. And yesterday I met Maharaj in the morning in Juhu temple, and Maharaj asked me to come to Pune, and naturally I cannot decline Maharaj's order, so I agreed. But I came mainly to be a part of this beautiful program. So many of you came being attracted by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. And I also am attracted to Maharaj, so I know how intensely wonderful this attraction actually is. And when I came here, I came to hear Maharaj actually. I didn't expect to speak because I know all of you have come to hear Maharaj, listen to him. And I didn't want to disappoint you all. And but then Maharaj kept on insisting that when I came, he told me that I have to give the class. And then I reasoned with him. I told him that it's natural that he gives the class, and first of all, I came to hear him. I get to hear me all the time, but only once in a while I get a chance to hear Maharaj, and I didn't want to miss that opportunity. But although he agreed at that time to give the class, and now you can see what it did to me. Radhat Maharaj is wonderful. He's the most exemplary devotee in our movement. And yeah, I'll follow your order. But now I got the mic. And I got the seat. Actually, ISKCON movement has gone through various phases within a very short span of time. At the beginning, Srila Prabhupada, when he was present on the planet, our movement had a specific shape. And that was, Srila Prabhupada was the founder acharya. Srila Prabhupada was the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was the center of ISKCON. And it was a glorious time, it was a glorious phase of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada attracted so many young boys and girls from all over the world. And being inspired by Srila Prabhupada, they have done wonderful things. The young boys and girls went to different parts of the world, establishing the movement. And Srila Prabhupada also gave recognition to those who went out and achieved things, wonderful things for him, for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And we've seen within a short span of 10 years' time, this Krishna consciousness movement all spread all over the world. And those days, the devotees had been so intensely inspired by Srila Prabhupada, they were actually prepared to do anything for him. Like they would risk their lives, they would go out to the remotest corners of this world in totally uncertain situations and establish Krishna consciousness movement. And that's how the movement spread. And then actually that was a phase. That was the initial phase, the phase of creation of ISKCON. The creation actually takes place in the mode of passion. There was a lot of passion in the movement. Of course, that passion was wonderfully harnessed and directed, guided by Srila Prabhupada. And the result was Krishna consciousness movement spread all over the world. in all the major cities of the world. And Srila Prabhupada established 108 temples in different parts of the world. And then Srila Prabhupada left the planet. Then ISKCON embarked on another phase that was the very powerful leading devotees of Srila Prabhupada took the lead of ISKCON movement. And unfortunately at that time, since there was no one to harness that mode of passion, that passion went little haywire. And that passion actually caused a lot of damage to the movement. The mode of passion, if it is not properly directed, if it's not properly guided, can cause a lot of damage. And the reality is that's what happened to ISKCON movement at that time. And there was a gradual decline. And then ISKCON actually embarked on another phase, which actually occurred to me, or the realization came to me through one encounter in New Vrindavan. Radhanath Maharaj and I, after taking prasad, we were lying on our left side. We were lying on the floor. Radhanath Maharaj was lying that way, I was lying this way. So both of us were on our left side, we were facing each other. And Maharaj was telling me that he had always been Kirtananda Swami's subordinate. He was happy. Kirtananda Swami was leading. He was a big leader of ISKCON at that time. The man behind New Vrindavan project, many other successful project. And Radhanath Maharaj was happy just being behind the scene doing his thing. But now he has to assume the role of a leader. He had to leave the background and come to the forefront. And he was telling me he didn't like to do that. He said he just likes to be behind the scene and doesn't really want to be in the forefront, doesn't want to be on the limelight. Then I told Maharaj that this is actually a very good sign. It's a very good sign for our movement, ISKCON movement. That those who do not actually want to become leaders, they are being forced to take the leadership position. And that is how our movement is now going to move forward. And I'm seeing gradually, or rather it is becoming very, very obvious to me that in today's ISKCON, a big, dynamic, charismatic, passionate personality is not the leading position. rather all over the world, there is a distinct recognition of a saintly personality's leadership. And this is the new phase that ISKCON has embarked. And this phase is from passionate to goodness phase. In passion, things happen very quickly. But if it is not properly managed, if it is not properly handled, if it is not properly harnessed, as I was mentioning, that we have seen that it can be quite damaging, it can be quite destructive. And we have seen that happening in our movement after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. But the mode of goodness makes things remain, last, and progress with a positive note. And this is a very, very good sign for our progressive future. When we see Radhanath Maharaj, what do we see? We see the embodiment of all the Vaishnava qualities. The first and foremost qualities of a Vaishnava are more humble than a blade of grass and tolerant as a tree. Trinadopi sumichena taruropi shahishnuna. I have seen such wonderful display of humble disposition of Maharaj. I have seen once somebody became very offensive to Maharaj because what he just... Maharaj just was presenting something which was not in agreement with that person in a meeting. And they were actually kind of, you can say, they went against ISKCON, this a group of individuals. And although they were so offensive to the movement, and they became offensive to Maharaj, Maharaj took an extremely humble position. I do not want to describe, I feel embarrassed even to tell what Maharaj did at that time. But at that time I saw that this is the real Vaishnava quality. That he is more humble than a bed of grass. For the sake of establishing Krishna consciousness, for the sake of establishing Srila Prabhupada's mission, he doesn't hesitate to take an extremely humble position just to make them comfortable in this movement and remain in the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And the quality of a Vaishnava is in his profound absorption in Krishna consciousness. The understanding of Vaishnava is always, Rupa Goswami is giving the definition, always remember Krishna, never forget him. And you can see that, I do not have to elaborate on these points. Wonderful, such wonderful absorption. such wonderful commitment to Srila Prabhupada's mission and such a wonderful foresight to push this movement forward, fulfilling Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction. He has many a times made great sacrifices for the benefit of Srila Prabhupada's movement. He sometimes had been even misunderstood because of that. But eventually, people saw what was the purpose of doing what he did. Although at that time they may have misunderstood his actions. Here I am not actually trying to glorify Maharaj as such. What I am actually trying to do is point out that the direction that ISKCON is taking is a very, very positive direction, and this is the direction that ISKCON must move forward on. Like, we must recognize that we have a very important responsibility. As members of International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, we all have the solemn responsibility to spread Krishna Consciousness movement all over the world, in every town and village. That is the goal that has been set for us. It is an impossible mission. This prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is apparently an impossible mission. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nothing is impossible. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can make impossible possible. That's why He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when He makes a prediction that this is what is going to happen, we can rest assured that this is going to happen in due course of time. The only consideration is what role we are going to play in accomplishing that mission. How we are going to fit in accomplishing that mission. And in order to do that, we have to have that implicit faith that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His words are not going to go in vain. It will happen. Whether it will happen in our lifetime, we don't know. But it will happen. Whether we will see it with our own eyes, doesn't matter. But we can rest assured that it will happen in due course of time. But in order to make it happen, we must participate in an appropriate way. And that appropriate way is the way Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants it to happen. We have to fit in to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's plan. And we should be very careful that our agenda, our personal agendas, do not conflict with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's plan. If that happens, then what will happen? Then we'll be kicked out of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Because Mahaprabhu's plan is going to fructify in reality. Therefore, the most intelligent thing to do, the most appropriate thing to do, is to just line up in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement and keep moving the way it is moving, the way Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making it to move forward. And at least I can personally can declare, very boldly I can declare, that I see Radhanath Maharaj is the leader of ISKCON today. And I love to follow follow his footsteps. And I am happy to see
that you all are also following.
Let's do the right thing.
We are here not to establish ourselves. We are here to become the humble servants. If we want to establish ourselves in Sri Chaitanya at the cost of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, it will be extremely unfortunate. We are here to serve. We are here not to become a big personality. We are here, we are in Krishna consciousness to become the humble servants. Then how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will use us, that's up to him. And we must float along with Mahaprabhu's, according to Mahaprabhu's plan, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers' plans, our previous acharyas' plans, Srila Prabhupada's plans. In this respect, another, quite a few thoughts actually come to my mind. There are many issues that are troubling our movement today. One issue is how the movement is going to move forward, surge forward in the future. This is a big challenge that we have. And personally, I do not know what is the solution, what should be the direction that this movement should go on, what's the policies that should be taken. But at least I have one confidence that Srila Prabhupada wanted this movement to be managed and guided by a collective management through the GBC body. Prabhupada gave a very clear indication. The GBC is going to be the ultimate managing authority of this movement. And Srila Prabhupada demonstrated, even during his presence on the planet, he wanted to establish the GBC as the final authority, the ultimate authority. Although he was the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but Prabhupada set it up even during his presence on this planet. He was not the head of the GBC. He placed himself as a member of the GBC, as one of the GBC members. This is how Prabhupada established the authority of the GBC body. Prabhupada very emphatically pointed out during his last few months on the planet. Many a times Prabhupada mentioned that the mistakes that his godbrothers made after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur created an institution. He also emphasized the importance of an institution over and above the personality as the main factor for Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement, which became very clear through Srila Prabhupada later on. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not really make himself the center of the movement that he established. He created an institution. He also emphasized the importance of the institution. Why? Because he was also convinced that a mission like spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world in every town and village is not going to happen in one person's lifetime. It will take generations. But to continue the mission, therefore, we need an institution so that the legacy would continue. The mission would continue. And he also emphasized that the institution should be managed collectively. Because that is the purpose of an institution. A collective management. A collective endeavor to achieve something that may take hundreds of years. That may take generations. And that collective endeavor was manifested through a body of collective management. And that's why he is the one who actually established this concept of GBC. He also said that let the GBC manage the institution, the governing body, through the governing body. But unfortunately, some of his leading followers could not understand the importance of this collective management. And soon after his disappearance, they got divided into two factions. One faction wanted to follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction of maintaining their mission through collective management. But other group, they considered that how can a religious institution, a spiritual organization, be maintained by a group of managers? For a spiritual institution, we need a spiritual head. We need an acharya. And they appointed an acharya. But unfortunately, that acharya had some spiritual difficulty. And when he fell down, the structure collapsed. Because he was the head. So when he collapsed, the structure collapsed along with him. And we saw the powerful mission that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established disintegrated. Individually they were carrying on in their own ashram, they were maintaining their preaching, they were maintaining their sadhana and so forth. But that worldwide mission that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur envisaged and structured the institution for, that did not happen. Gauriamat, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur institution, collapsed. Then from that ruin of Gauriamat, from the ruins of Gauriamat, Srila Prabhupada actually revived the spirit of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And that is what ISKCON is. ISKCON is not another institution. ISKCON is actually the continuity of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's actual mission. ISKCON is the Gauriamat of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this is not my words, what I am saying. This is what Srila Prabhupada told us. Not this last part, that ISKCON is the continuity, but what I am saying is that the importance of collective management through the GBC, that has been very emphatically established by Srila Prabhupada. And he told us, he reminded us not to make the same mistake. In Prabhupada's words, Prabhupada mentioned that don't make the same mistake that my godbrothers made after our Guru Maharaj's disappearance. And what was the mistake? That Guru Maharaj wanted them to maintain the institution through the collective management of the GBC. But they did not follow that. They appointed an acharya and the acharya fell down and the structure collapsed. You all don't make the same mistake. So ISKCON, and today we can see, 32 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, ISKCON is still together. Yes, we had many difficulties. We had faced inconceivable trials and tribulations after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance.
ISKCON has suffered immensely after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. But still, ISKCON is together. 32 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, and ISKCON is becoming stronger and stronger with the passing of time. Why? Because ISKCON is following Srila Prabhupada's instruction. Maintain the institution through the collective management of the GBC. GBC is not only just a GBC that Prabhupada gave. Prabhupada gave a very specific line of authority, a specific structure of management, where the GBC body is the ultimate managing authority, and then the GBC secretary is taking care of the affairs of the zones, and then the units of ISKCON are the temples. The temple is managed by a president, and he has his own structure. He has vice president, secretary, departmental heads and all. But the units of ISKCON are actually the temples. And then around the temple there will be congregation and so forth. And it's a very clear line of authority structure that Srila Prabhupada gave. And as long as we follow that, and since ISKCON is following that, in spite of so many difficulties, ISKCON is still together, ISKCON is still going strong. So, this is the saving grace for our movement. And so in this way, I personally feel that we have a glorious future. The leaders are there, but we are seeing that all the leaders, even powerful leaders, extremely powerful individuals, are functioning under the authority structure of the GBC. And we are seeing when there is some difficulty individuals are facing, the GBC is stepping forward and correcting those situations. And even when the GBC is, even when the GBC members are facing spiritual difficulties, they are being removed and new members are being brought in. So in this way, I feel that our movement is moving forward in a very with a very positive note, in a very positive direction. So now we have this wonderful challenge, and this challenge is to spread this movement all over the world in every town and village. Another thing that comes to my mind, and when I come to such an assembly, I feel very positive, I feel very, very enlivened, and very much reassured. And that is that when I see the youth are coming forward, youth are getting involved in such a wonderful way. So many qualified youth are becoming involved in Krishna consciousness. Because the future actually is the youth. It's the youth that makes things happen. During Prabhupada's time, it is Prabhupada actually mobilized the youth of America. And they went out and did all kinds of wonderful things. And without the youth involvement, we don't really have much hope. So, here again, I see that the youth are being so wonderfully being inspired, encouraged, and guided in establishing this movement. So,
Please, those of you who are young, please take up this mission very seriously. Why youth involvement is so important? Because youth are, they're grown up, yet they're free. They're not encumbered. Because once you enter into household life, it becomes difficult to commit yourself. Therefore, before you enter into household life, please try to do something wonderful for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Just consider any big achievement in the world. Who actually made it happen? It's the youth that actually made it happen. When you are young, then you are free. Then you can risk anything. Then even if you fail, it don't really matter so much because you are just alone. But when you have other responsibilities, especially two aspects, once you take up a job and once you get married, then your freedom is considerably lost. So when you are free, just direct your, channelize your energy and enthusiasm towards achieving this wonderful goal of spreading Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement all over the world. I'm not trying to discourage the householders or others by any means. But what I was actually trying to say is at some point in time, we are more free to do things in a more effective way than some other times. But this movement is for everyone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement is for everyone. And the way we move forward in participating in this movement is simply depend upon the holy name and chant the holy name and spread the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the recent time, we are faced with some very difficult crisis. Like the world is becoming extremely violent, terrorists are becoming the biggest threat. The experts feel that the Third World War will not be fought between nations. In the Third World War, there won't be any boundary. In the Third World War, the soldiers will not be wearing uniforms. The Third World War is going to be the war of terror. The terrorists, they don't have any nationality. They can be your next door neighbor, but they can be your enemy. They can belong to the opposite camp, opposite the enemy side. They are not going to wear any uniform. They don't have any geographical boundary or national boundary. And we have seen in the recent past what happened in Bombay. So this is just the beginning. The world is heading for a major, major crisis. We can't avoid it. Because the deadly weapons that they have invented, the weapons that they have created for mass destruction, if those weapons fall in the wrong hands, you can well imagine what's going to happen to this world. Now, what is the solution to this problem? At least we know. The only solution to this problem is the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We have seen that. Prabhupada himself had demonstrated that. When the Calcutta, during the Second World War, when the Calcutta was facing the threat of being bombed by the Japanese, because Calcutta used to be the big British base at that time, so the Japanese were thinking of bombing Calcutta, and people were evacuating from the city. When everybody was leaving the city, what did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada just took the Mridanga and Kartal and went out on a Harinam. And the Japanese didn't bomb Calcutta. Now different people may have different theories, but we know what the reality was. It is because of Srila Prabhupada taking out the Harinam on the street of Calcutta, Calcutta was saved. So this is how Srila Prabhupada demonstrated his implicit faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction that Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama Iva Kevalam Kalau Nasteva 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 Gatiramnatha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this point very clear. When he appeared in other incarnations, Mahaprabhu comes with weapon. He comes with disc or mace or bow and arrow or sword. Sometimes he uses his nail. So he comes with some weapon to kill the demons. But in the age of Kali, Mahaprabhu did not bring any weapon. What's his weapon? He brought a weapon, Sanga Panga Astra. Astra. The weapon. What is the astra that Mahaprabhu came with? That astra is this Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So let the terrorists attack. What we will do? We have our mridangas and kartals. The more severe their attacks become, more louder will become our kirtan. And then we'll see what Mahaprabhu will do. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another important consideration here is, like, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in India at a time when the whole of India was under Muslim domination. Isn't it quite amazing that in this age the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated in a way at a situation where the whole of India was under the Muslim rule? That means they're completely against the Vedic culture. At a time like that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared and established the Sankirtan movement. Another important consideration is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to distribute the holy name, Naam, Naam Sankirtan, Naam Yajna, Sankirtan Yajna. But who is the Namacharya in this Naam Sankirtan Yajna? Srila Haridas Thakur, who appeared in a Muslim family. Now these two reasons, these two factors are great mystery. Are two great mystery, which probably will be revealed to us in course of time. We will see why Mahaprabhu appeared in India at a time when the entire India was under the Muslim domination, and he established this Sankirtan Jagat through a Muslim personality, Srila Haridas Thakur, apparently a Muslim personality. So, without undermining any particular religion and all, but one thing is becoming very clear, that Islam is going to become the biggest threat to this world. At that time, Mahaprabhu had to deal with the Muslims in India. Today, or gradually, in course of time, the whole world will have to face with them in this very, very critical situation. And we have to understand, we have to have that implicit faith and conviction that the only way to counteract their attack is through the Sankirtan movement. We are not going to pick up weapons to fight with them. Our weapon is going to be the holy name. And our strength is going to be our collective glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. Now, are you all ready to listen to the Bhagavatam class given by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj? Yeah.
Would you like to have prasad now?
No. We want to go on till the evening.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. When Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj speaks on these subjects, it is deep from within his heart, because he personally spent quality time with Srila Prabhupada, gave his life, his soul, his everything for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. What he is speaking, not about me, that's a whole other subject matter. But when he speaks about his concern for ISKCON, his concern for each and every devotee's life, it really is with a lot of realization. It's an expression of his love for Guru and Gauranga. The other things he said were just some sort of etiquette to encourage me, which I do not deserve, but I'm grateful for your kindness. Do you remember the Srimad Bhagavatam verse? It was about deity worship. With your permission, I will speak something on this subject. Go Premanandi. Every year when we come to Pune, we worship the deities of Gaur Nitai, who travel from the altar in the home of Krishna Chandra Prabhu and Radha Priya Mataji, to bestow their mercy upon all of us. In that little temple, only a few people may come a day. But during Pune Yatra, hundreds and hundreds of times more people have the darshan of these deities than the whole rest of the year, than the 361 days of the year on their altar. These deities are very special to me. I have often told the story. My mother and father
although favorable and kind, were completely bewildered about what I was doing with my life for many years, from 1970 till 1989. Until Srinathji Prabhu and Krishnachandra Prabhu somehow or other convinced them to come to India. And although I tried to explain what I was doing, and they would sometimes come to visit me at different temples in America, every time they came, they became more bewildered. It hurt their hearts, but they never criticized. They always supported, but it was painful. So 19 years passed in this way, and by being with the devotees in Bombay, in those days it was Bombay, by seeing the quality of the character of the devotees, the kindness, the hospitality, the material position of these people, their hearts were transformed. I'll never forget. In Radha Gopinath Temple, at that time it was really a dilapidated old building. The temple room was just like shambles. And there may have been about 60, 70, 100 people at the Sunday feast lecture. And I was leading kirtan with Murdanga. And right before my eyes, I saw my father dancing with Srinathji Prabhu. Running back and forth in the temple with all the devotees. Then I looked at the other side and I saw my mother and Srinathji Prabhu's mother's hands like this spinning in circles. They would cry every night. They were proud. They actually took the highest happiness in seeing their son part of the Hare Krishna movement. They wanted to see Taj Mahal. So we went. First we went to Jaipur. That was interesting. We went to Jaipur and I took them to Radha Govinda Temple, and as soon as the doors opened, my parents bowed down immediately. And my mother reached in her purse and my father reached in his pocket and they took out money and they said, "Can we give this to Krishna?" Now for an American middle class elderly man and woman, this is not normal. They had a flight from Delhi. We drove, and on the way, we stopped in Vrindavan. That was an interesting story. But while we were there, my mother and father thought we should buy a gift for Krishnachandra Prabhu and Radha and Srinathji Prabhu's families, because they treated us so nicely. And my mother said, we should buy them deities. So we bought these deities were bought by my parents as a gift for Krishnachandra Prabhu's family. And Krishna Balaram deities for Srinathji Prabhu's family, which are still being worshipped in his house. I was just thinking of the loving relationship that Krishna exchanges with his devotees through the forms of the deity. In this regard, I would like to tell one story. In a place on the bank of the Ganga called Ambika Kalna, is the temple of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. How many of you have been to that place? Please raise both of your arms and say Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
How many have not been to that place?
Hari Bol.
So, through the process of hearing, we will take you there today. They are the deities of Gauridas Pandit. In Goro Ganodesh Deepika, which was written by Kavi Karnapur, the son of Sivananda Sain, he tells that the dearmost friend of Krishna and Balaram, Subal, appeared as Gauridas Pandit, who was the dearmost friend of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it describes Subal as having a complexion like molten gold. Dearmost friend of Krishna. He was decorated with celestial jewels, yellow clothes. He had large, lotus-like eyes, and he was so dear as the friend of all the residents of Vrindavan. In the Stavavali, it tells that Subal was forever drenched in the fountain of Sri Radhika's love, that he was never separated from the loving hand of Gokul Chandra, Krishna. Not even in his dream, for a single moment, could he ever be separated from Krishna. He was the very embodiment of love. There was practically no pastime of Krishna that Subal did not have entrance to serve him. In the forest, Subal would carefully make beautiful bed for Radha and Krishna. And while Krishna would be laying on that bed with his head in the lap of Srimati Radharani, Subal would be singing the glories of the divine couple and fanning Radha and Krishna with a fan made out of the natural materials of the Vrindavan forest. There is a story that so nicely reveals the very intimate participation of Subal in Krishna's pastimes. One time when Krishna was herding the cows in the forests of Braja, he suddenly was struck with intense separation from Srimati Radharani. Who should he turn to? Immediately he called out for Subal. Oh, Subal, I cannot live unless I see her immediately. Please, by whatever means possible, go to find her and bring her here. Subal said, it is the broad daylight. How can I bring her from her in-law's house in the forest? It is impossible. Krishna said, by any means, somehow or other, you must, if you want to see me live. So Subal went to Yavat, and there he met with gopis to somehow or other make a plan. Now, Subal had golden complexion, and his body so much resembled Srimati Radharani. So he put on Radharani's clothes, and Srimati Radharani put on Subal's clothes. And Srimati Radharani came out. And her in-laws, they called out, Subal, what are you doing here? And he said, I lost my calf He ran this direction. I'm trying to find him. Oh, there he is. And then she picked up a calf and put it in her arms and said, I will go now return to the pastures. She went to the place where Krishna was waiting. And when Krishna saw Radharani dressed as Subal, he cried out, Subal, Subal, did you bring her? Did you bring my beloved? Where is she? And Radharani, in the voice of Subal, said, it was impossible to bring her. I have come alone. Krishna began to cry. How he cried. Said that I will not be able to maintain my life. And then Srimati Radharani dropped the calf and came before Krishna and said, do not you recognize me? It is me. In this way, Subal of Krishna's Leela, he appeared as Gauri Das Pandit. The younger brother of Suryadas Sarakela. They lived in a village called Shaligram. With the permission of his elder brother, Gauri Das lived in seclusion under a tree on the bank of the Ganges in the village of Ambika Kalna. There, he was constantly immersed in remembering Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Knowing his mind, one day Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came by boat from Shantipur to Ambika Kalna. He said, O Gauri Das, I have come today. From Shantipur I went to Harinadi. From Harinadi I crossed the Ganges on a boat with this oar. And he held up an oar in his hand. He said, this oar brought me, I personally rowed it across the Ganges. And with this oar, I will carry all of mankind across the ocean of birth and death. And today I give this oar to you, Gauri Das. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. This is very significant. What does this oar represent? It represents the mercy, the instruction of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As he gave that oar to his devotee, Gauri Das Pandit, it is this oar of the grace and instruction that he revealed to the world that has been passed down through disciplic succession. When Lord Chaitanya was personally present, he delivered many people by his kripasita. Simply by seeing him, people would attain prema bhakti. There is the story in Navadvip where Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw the washerman who would do the laundry for Srivas. Was on the street. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised his arms, chanted the holy name, and this washerman, who wasn't even a devotee, he was from another religion altogether, he looked at Lord Chaitanya and said, I have seen, and instantly prema bhakti awakened in his heart. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dancing in that procession of Nam Sankirtan to the house of Chankazi, anyone, everyone, whoever they were, without discrimination, who saw him achieve prema bhakti. When he danced at the Rath Yatra, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, all the pilgrims, all the priests, the pandas, all the residents of Puri, everyone who happened to be there, even the military, who were just trying to keep order in the parade, just by seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his arms raised, his beautiful golden form, pouring tears of love, loudly chanting the holy names. In an instant, they achieve prema bhakti. Unmotivated, uninterrupted love of God. They were qualified to return back home, back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan. They didn't have to do any sadhana. That was the special mercy Lord Chaitanya offered when he was personally present. But for all other human beings, for all time to come, he left this ore of his instructions. Srila Prabhupada's books are such a powerful manifestation of this ore. By understanding these teachings, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, coming to holy places, performing Nam Sankirtan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if he sees that we are sincere in just accepting his instruction, he will personally carry us across the ocean of material existence with the oar of his grace. That is our good fortune. That is Srila Prabhupada's inconceivable kindness upon the whole world. Srila Prabhupada went on a boat, Jaladuta. It's very symbolic. He crossed several oceans on a boat with great difficulty. For what purpose? To help us cross the ocean of material existence and go back home, back to Godhead. Parama karuna pahundui jana nithai gorachan. Tava avatara sarasiromani kevala ananda kanda. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are very kind, supremely merciful. They are doing what no other incarnations have ever done. Such a simple process for everyone, anyone. Srila Prabhupada would tell us again and again, all that is required is our sincerity. But what does it mean to be sincere? It means to wholeheartedly give our best to follow the instructions of the Lord without duplicity. If we are just sincere to chant the holy names, to serve the devotees, to follow these basic teachings by Srila Prabhupada's prayer, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda will bring us to the highest perfection. Kevala Anandakanda. They are the essence of all avatars, and their process is so joyful. Chanting, dancing, feasting, hearing wonderful stories, beautiful philosophy. from Ambika Kalna after giving him the oar. Lord Chaitanya brought Gauridas Pandit back to Nadia with him. They spent many days. And while there, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu composed several verses. A song in glorification of pure bhakti. And he gave those verses to Gauridas Pandit and sent him back to Ambika Kalna. Gauridas, for hours and hours and hours a day, he would just look at the beautiful handwriting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and remember the Lord. He would recite again and again and again those beautiful prayers. And for those who are fortunate, who visit Ambika Kalna, those verses written by the hands of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and that oar that will carry mankind across the ocean of material existence are still there for us to see. But you have to pay the pujari a special donation before he'll show you. Gauridas Pandit Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were his life and soul. It is explained how Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda manifested from his heart in the form of the light in his eyes. It's a very beautiful explanation. Because when a person is dead, there is no light in that person's eyes. Light in the eyes is a symbol of life. That means his very life was Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And because they were manifesting in the light in his eyes, wherever he glanced, that place would become purified. The mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was manifested in that place. Sometimes we hear stories about Srila Prabhupada by his disciples. Many, in fact, most disciples of Srila Prabhupada never personally spoke with him. But people talk about his glance. Just by his glance at them, they felt infused with enthusiasm, inspiration for bhakti. Just by his glance upon them, they really felt a connection to Krishna. Why is that? Like Gauridas Pandit. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu were his very life and soul. The light in his eyes was the grace of the Lord. And wherever he glanced, it penetrated those who were receptive. It penetrated their hearts and awakened their bhakti. Wherever he glanced, it made that place into Vrindavan, Navadvip, the spiritual world. For Gauridas Pandit, a moment of seeing Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, he would be overwhelmed in ecstatic emotion. But a moment in separation, where he did not see them, he would plunge in an ocean of sorrow. The Lord is within everyone's heart. Knowing this, Lord Chaitanya met with Gauridas and gave him an instruction. He said, I want you to get a neem tree from Navadvip. I will arrange it. And you should personally carve the deities of me and Lord Nityananda and worship that. And in this way, you will never be separated from us. Do not have any fear that you have never carved anything before.
I will personally, in your hands, carve this deity of myself for you.
So the Lord arranged for a
neem tree
from Navadvip to be brought to Ambika Kauna. And there Gauri Das, with great pleasure, under the order of the Lord, began to carve. Bhakti Ratnakar explains how this deity was self-manifest. How is that? Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, from within the heart of Gauri Das, personally carved their own forms, bound by the love of his devotee. And Gauri Das was simply an instrument to manifest the Lord. This is also very instructive. When we are bound by the love of the Lord, and when the Lord is bound by our love, we become instruments of that love. Just like the Lord manifested a deity for him, similarly, let us use the example of Srila Prabhupada. He manifested the Lord in so many people's hearts in so many ways. Srila Prabhupada would have devotees read him his own books. And he would say, I have not written these books. Krishna has written these books. Hundreds of deities of Gaur-Nitai, Radha, Krishna installed all over the world. Srila Prabhupada was simply the instrument, and through him, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Radha, and Krishna were manifesting themselves. It's very deep, profound, and absolutely wonderful. The path of bhakti is extraordinary. And Srila Prabhupada, when he would chant the holy names, when he would speak, he was an instrument. And through him, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were manifesting themselves within the hearts of those who were receptive to him. And Srila Prabhupada asked all of us, all of his followers, for all generations to come, by simply following his teachings and the example he had set, we could all be instruments through him by which Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda will deliver the fallen souls in this world. And there is no greater pleasure. For a devotee, making money, getting a position, having people honor and respect you, this is not a pleasure. This is a burden. What's really a pleasure is when we give up our ego completely and we can just be an instrument by which a higher power, the higher power of Prabhupada, the previous Acharya, Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu, can manifest through us. Trinarapi sunichena taror ibasi hishma. When we have this quality, then we are not blocking the flow of the Lord. It can profusely manifest from us. But as soon as we take credit for anything, that mercy, that flow of grace is impeded. What was Srila Prabhupada's prayer? The foundational prayer to the establishment of this whole worldwide spiritual movement. Let me just be your puppet and make me dance as you want me to dance. The puppet never feels that I am moving on my own. The puppet can take no credit. The puppet is simply moving according to the will of the puppeteer. As soon as we take credit for what we do, Krishna may cut the strings. And we have seen. We have seen very, very powerful dancing puppets all of a sudden just fall because the strings are cut. We are helpless without the mercy of the Lord. To just be the puppet of the puppet of the puppet. That is our aspiration. Because in that mood, Krishna can manifest himself through our sincerity. That is parampara. Gauridas carved these beautiful self-manifesting deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and just gazing upon him, he saw the Lord face to face. He was in ecstasy. He was weeping. He performed the installation ceremony. One day, as Gauridas Pandit was looking at Gornitai, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda spoke to him. They said, Gauridas, you cannot understand how exalted your devotion is. Only we can understand. This is very instructive also. A great devotee never thinks he or she is a great devotee. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's revealing his heart. I'm lower than a worm in stool. I'm more fallen than Jagai and Madhai. Anyone who hears my name loses all their piety, and anyone who speaks my name becomes sinful. I am diseased by the boils of envy. In this condition, I am falling at the feet and taking shelter of the great physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He doesn't think he has devotion. But all the Vaishnavas and the Lord himself, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda personally manifested Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami because he had this humble attitude. And Kaviraj Goswami said, I am not writing this book. I don't know what's happening. I'm over 90 years old. I'm an invalid. By the mercy of Rupa and Raghunath, everything is being done. Then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda said to Gauridas, O Subal, can you not remember your previous life? Can you remember when every day together we would bring our cows to the forests of Vrindavan, to the Yamuna River to drink water? Can you not remember, Subal, all the fun and games we would play together in the pastures of Brajbhumi? And then, right before Subal's eyes, Lord Chaitanya turned into Krishna. His complexion like a dark tamal tree. Beautiful lotus-like eyes. The Gunja Mala decorating his body. He had a Vajayanti Mala has been described by Madhava Maharaj yesterday. He had a peacock feather adorning his curling blackish hair, which encircled his moon-like face, his lips red like the bimba fruit, his nose like a sesame flower. His dress, the color of lightning, standing holding his flute. And there was Balaram with the complexion of a spring cloud, beautiful lotus-like eyes, blue garments. Together they had sticks, buffalo horns, decorated with forest flowers and leaves and fruits from Vrindavan. Even the minerals of Vrindavan they would smear on their body. They both smiled upon Gauri Das, who stood there, looking at his deities, who are now Krishna Balaram. He lost all composure. He was overwhelmed, thrilled with ecstasy. It was only by the grace of the deities that he was able to keep standing. In this way, Gauri Das could do nothing but silently stare and stare and stare at the beautiful forms of his beloved Lord and chant the holy name. One day, Gauri Das Pandit offered bhoga to Gornitai. With sincere devotional prayers, he requested his deities to honor the food. And he had such a close connection with them that he would actually see them eat. But on this particular day, the deities remained completely silent, but did not eat. Some time passed. Gauri Das Pandit became angry. He said, Gauranga, Nityananda, if you are not satisfied with the food I prepare, then why do you force me to cook every day? There was complete silence. Then it was time for Lord Gauri Das to speak. They said, Gauri Das, can't you just prepare a small offering? Every day you cook so many preparations in huge quantities. And we ask you just make a little, but you never listen to us. Don't you know that every day we see how hard you struggle and toil to cook so many preparations and so much it causes us pain? Just cook a little. We'll be happy. Complete silence. Then it was Gauri Das Pandit's turn. He said, all right. If that's what you want, every day I'll just make some boiled rice and some boiled spinach. That's all. Now eat. He had no intention of doing that, but he'd say anything to get them to eat. So hearing that, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda smiled and laughed, and they ate everything. And as they were eating, the deities were talking. Oh, this preparation is so good. It is so good. It is so tasty. It is so delicious. And Gauri Das Pandit was very, very happy. One day, should I continue? Thank you, thank you. Gauri Das Pandit was about to go in to dress the deities. in the morning. And he was thinking how much I would love to offer Gornitai precious jewels as ornaments. But he didn't have anything. He was just living in seclusion near a banyan tree on the banks of the Ganges in a very, very lonely place. He didn't have anything except love. But Krishna answers the prayers of his devotees. Gornitai, knowing his mind, on that morning, dressed themselves. They manifested precious jewels, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, sapphires. And they were inlaid in gold and silver and ivory. Wonderful, wonderful jewelry. They placed all these jewels, bracelets and ankle bells and necklaces. And Gauridas went and opened the doors to the temple, and he saw the deities dressed like this. He was struck with wonder. He was thinking, in my meditation, these are exactly the jewels and ornaments I was offering to the deities. And now I'm seeing that the deities are actually wearing these things. This is the power of love. Krishna is bhava-grahi. That means he accepts the sentiment of a devotee's devotion. Many examples of this. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we hear about this Brahmin in South India who made that amazing feast in his mind. He had nothing. Just sitting on the bank of the Godavari River like this. And in his mind, he's collecting water from the river, and then he's filling pots, then he's making a fire, then he's putting rice in it. Then he's going out into fields and collecting vegetables, and getting sugar from the marketplace. He's doing all this in his mind. And he's preparing everything. He makes a wonderful feast. And with it, kheer, or sweet rice. And he's thinking it should be nice and cold before offering it to the deities. So he touches it. And it was so hot it burned his finger. He broke his meditation. And when he looked at his finger, it was burnt. Meanwhile, in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan started to laugh. Lakshmi said, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Look down there, it's Brahman. Let's bring him back home, back to Godhead right now." Krishna accepts our intention, our purpose. That is why in the path of bhakti there is no impediment except our own lack of desire. Narasingha Das Brahmachari, Narasingha Nanda Brahmachari, he paved that magnificent road for Lord Chaitanya to go from Kuliagram toward Vrindavan. And as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking on the road, he was seeing how it was made of gold. It was wide. It was covered with stemless flower petals. He saw beautiful lakes and trees and birds. Whatever was in Narasingha Nanda Brahmachari's mind is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw. Although for everyone else, it was just a dusty old road. Through deserts and forests. What Gauridas wanted to offer the deities, but had no capacity materially to offer, Gornitai
personally dress themselves with every one of those ornaments.
Gauridas was thinking, how wonderful. How wonderful. All my desires are fulfilled. This is the beautiful expression of a devotee. A devotee's desire is to please Krishna. A devotee wants nothing else except Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna shows his pleasure in order to fulfill his devotee's desires. Then the deities manifested their original form, and Lord Chaitanya spoke to him. He said, actually, Gauridas, what pleases us most is ornaments made out of flowers. Flowers are more precious to us even than jewels. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachta. Krishna says in Gita, offer me a leaf, a fruit, little water, or a flower with devotion and I will accept it. Who cannot collect flowers? And if it is offered to the deity with devotion, it is more precious to Krishna than jewels and rubies and emeralds offered by a materialistic person. So hearing that the Lord loves to be decorated with flowers, Gauridas went out and started collecting more and more and more and more flowers, and he was making beautiful garlands that were going from the Lord's necks down to their lotus feet. And he was making bracelets and anklets and all sorts of other necklaces made out of the wild flowers. And then after decorating them, Gauridas Pandit picked up a mirror and showed it to Gaur Nityananda for their pleasure. And seeing them, their faces smiling with so much happiness, looking at their own image in the mirror, Gauridas wept uncontrollable tears of love. Early one morning, Gauridas Pandit went to visit Gadadhar Pandit, who was the incarnation of Srimati Radharani in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. When Gadadhar Pandit saw Gauridas, he said, you have come just by seeing you, a great Vaishnava. I know that today will be a very, very good day. And Gauridas Pandit, with great humility, he said, I have come to you because by offering my life to you, I could become good. They embraced. Gadadhar Pandit said, how can I serve you? Whatever I have is yours. Please tell me. Gauridas Pandit said, I pray that you fulfill my one desire. Gadadhar Pandit said, anything, whatever I have is yours. Please ask. He said, I want your associate, Hridayananda. Gadadhar Pandit immediately called for Hridayananda. Hridayananda bowed down before the two pundits, worshipped them with love, and then Gadadhar Pandit, with great affection, he said, now I am dedicating you in the service of Gauridas Pandit. You go with him, you are his. Now this was a very, very deep pastime. Because from his early childhood, Gadadhar Pandit raised Hridayananda and personally taught him the holy scriptures. Every day he profusely showered his blessings on little Hridayananda. until he grew up.
He had such deep affection for this devotee.
But still, in a spirit of selfless service to a Vaishnav, he was willing to give him away to serve Gauridas Pandit, because that was his will. This is the spirit of the unity, of the oneness in heart of all the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It wasn't my disciple, my property. Everyone was sharing. Everything belongs to the Lord. I am just the servant of the servant of the servant. Whether you're a guru, whether you're a disciple, whether you're a grand disciple, whatever your position is, we're all united in this spirit of servant of the servant of the servant, willing to cooperate and help each other. And the greatest joy is to make sacrifices for someone you love. Gauridas Pandit and Gadadhar Pandit spent the rest of the day speaking about Krishna and chanting the holy names in Nam Sankirtan. Gauridas took Hridayananda back to Ambika Kalna, and there he initiated him. He gave him the Diksha Mantra and offered his disciple at the lotus feet of Gornitai. One day, Gauridas Pandit said to Hridayananda that very soon is coming the appearance day of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I want to have a beautiful festival for the deities, but we have nothing. I am going to travel around for some time, village to village, town to town, and go to my followers' homes and collect provisions that we can use for a grand festival for the deities, and we will invite many, many exalted Vaishnavas. Gauridas went and started traveling from home to home. And he became so absorbed. Whenever he was at devotees, he'd forget about time. He'd forget all about this material existence. He would take his devotees to a secluded place and have Hari Karata and Hari Kirtan and be completely absorbed. This is the way he was spending his days. Meanwhile, Hridayananda, he was doing the worship of the deities. And there was only 2 days before the festival was supposed to start. And by that time, people already had brought so many provisions for the deities. They had enough right there. He was thinking, 2 days left. Where is Gurudev? He's still not come. We haven't invited anyone yet. So meditating on the lotus feet of his spiritual master, dedicating his life for his pleasure, Hridayananda sent messengers to give invitations to the devotees in all around the area and the extended area. Now, in those days, invitations were not just you get something in the mail. Everything was done with such love. We read this about the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. With every invitation, they would either personally go or send a very, very important devotee, because this was important service. It wasn't just a job to pay a courier for. A very special soul would travel to that person's house that was being invited with garlands and gifts and prasad and offer obeisances and from the heart of heart verbally invite and then offer handwritten invitations. They didn't print them.
We think our invitations are so nice because they have all that rice paper on them and they're written in embossed different types of lettering. Yes? But the devotion, Sri Dayananda, he was writing each invitation and each one would be different. It was especially for that particular person with his own signature on behalf of Gauridas Pandit. In this way, people's hearts were melted. They had to come. They were bound by the love of the devotees. This is Vaishnava culture, the way it was lived at the time of Mahaprabhu's associates and the next generations after. Meanwhile, Gauridas Pandit returned one day before the festival. He found out that Sri Dayananda already sent invitations. And although in his heart he was very, very happy with his disciple, for his own reasons, he pretended to be extremely angry. He said to Sri Dayananda, without my permission, even while I'm still living in this world, you have acted so independently to invite people without my consultation. I will not join you for this festival. Sri Dayananda left, went to the bank of the Ganges, sat under a tree in seclusion. Meanwhile, many, many exalted devotees started arriving at the temple of Gornitai. And Gauridas Pandit was welcoming them. There was kirtan, there was darshan, there was prasad. It was wonderful. Hearing about this festival, a wealthy merchant sent an entire boat of boga and other facilities to be utilized for this festival. So Sri Dayananda, he sent a message to his Gurudev from the bank of the Ganges. He say, I have a whole boatload here of provisions for your festival. May I have your permission to bring them up? And Gauridas Pandit sent a message back, no, I don't want you here. Have your own festival down there. Hare Krishna. Sri Dayananda was in bliss because he knew the heart of his guru. He knew his guru was actually very happy. So he began to have his own festival in the bank of the Ganges. And soon many, many people came. And what does festival mean in Gaudiya Vaishnava society? Kevala Anandakanda. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. So they began with the first two. They were chanting and dancing. Now please listen carefully. They were all dancing in a circle. Now at night, when we say dance in circles, this is parampara. They were all dancing in circles. And as all the devotees were chanting and chanting and chanting, the murdungas and the karatals were playing so beautifully, they filled the entire sky. And the chanting of the holy names was emanating from the hearts of each devotee with so much love, with so much devotion. All that could be heard in the four directions was the beautiful sound of Krishna's holy name. Because Krishna is not different than his names.
And the deities of Gaur Nitai were a distance away in the temple. As they were chanting, they were all feeling intense separation from the deities, especially Sri Dayananda. So as the devotees were in a circle dancing, Sri Dayananda saw right before his eyes the deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda manifest right in the center of that circle of chanters, and then they came alive. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his magnificent golden form, his arms which extended below his knees, with his arms raised, was dancing exquisitely with tears of prema flowing from his eyes. And Lord Nityananda Prabhu was loudly crying out the holy names, dancing and dancing and dancing. The two brothers were in absolute ecstasy as they looked at Sri Dayananda and smiled. Sri Dayananda was weeping, overwhelmed with love. Meanwhile, Gauridas Pandit, who was so proud of his disciple, could hear the kirtan. It was so loud. It was so full of love. He was so inspired, so happy with his disciple, even though he was pretending to chastise him. Then he told another disciple, Gangadas, "Now, go to the altar and perform arti." Gangadas opened the doors. There was no one home. The deities were gone. He called, "Gauridas, Gauridas, Gurudev, the deities are gone." Gauridas came running and he saw this. And he immediately understood what happened. Because that kirtan was so enthusiastic with devotion that Gaur Nitai left the altar to go to the bank of the Ganges, bound by the love of Sri Dayananda. Although Gauridas Pandit was in so much ecstasy from the very core of his heart, he was so happy with his disciple, he pretended to be very angry and picked up a stick and stormed down to the bank of the Ganges. Meanwhile, Gaur Nitai were dancing, dancing, and dancing when they saw Gauridas coming with a stick. They became afraid. And all of a sudden, they just disappeared. And they went on the altar, back in the temple. But Gauridas saw something that deeply affected his life. He personally witnessed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dive from the kirtan right into the heart of Sri Dayananda. Gauridas Pandit gazed at the heart and he saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu munificently, as bright as a million suns, giving darshan to him in the heart of his own disciple. For a long time, he just stood there and gazed at the Lord in Sri Dayananda's chest. And without even knowing it, the stick fell from his hand. And then in great ecstasy, he reached out his arms, ran to Sri Dayananda, embraced him, and drenched Sri Dayananda's entire body with the tears of his love. There is no greater happiness for a real spiritual master than seeing a disciple making advancement in Krishna consciousness. Seeing a disciple receiving the mercy of the Lord, attaining love of the Lord, and being empowered by the Lord. Gauridas just embraced his disciple again and again and again. And then he spoke with a faltering voice. He said, "My child, from this day on,
I give you the name Hriday Chaitanya, in whose heart Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is forever residing.
And from that day on, his name became Hridayananda.
Together, Gauridas Pandit
and Hriday Chaitanya, his name became Hriday Chaitanya, the two of them returned to the temple of Gornitai, and on that day, in the holy festival, Gauridas Pandit entrusted the Seva Puja, the worship of Gornitai, to Hriday Chaitanya. And the festival continued, where many, many devotees from all directions assembled, where they chanted, they danced, and they ate sumptuous Krishna prasad. And in this way, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were most pleased. What pleases the Lord more than anything else? To see the devotees united with love for each other, chanting his holy names. Even if we have disagreements, even if we have different natures, different tastes, different communities, castes, nationalities, all of these things are external and superficial. What is important? Samsidhir Hari Toshanam. How we please Krishna. Sankirtan movement. Lord Sri Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu are most pleased when we cooperate. Srila Prabhupada said in his last days, one of his final instructions to all of his followers for all time to come, you will show your love for me by how you cooperate to carry on this great mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Kali Yuga, to cooperate? It is the age permeated by the spirit of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's very difficult instruction to ask people in Kali Yuga to cooperate is more difficult than asking them to move mountains. But by the mercy of Guru, one can move mountains. And we could receive that mercy simply by showing our love for Him. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kutopi. When Gurudev is pleased, Krishna is pleased. There's no other purpose to our life. So yes, it is vital to our own spiritual survival and vital to the salvation of humanity that we put the higher principle above all others and we cooperate, we unite for the pleasure of Sri Guru and Krishna. And in that spirit, with loving service to one another, we chant the holy names. And just as we find in this story, when we chant in that united spirit of devotion, circle. The interesting thing about a circle is no one has a higher seat or a better position than anyone else. Yes? In a circle, we are all just united as one. We're all interconnected.
When we chant the holy name with that consciousness, yes, Radha Krishna, Krishna Balaram, Gaur Nitai, they manifest in their names. They dance. Whether we see them or not, they will be dancing with us in kirtan. They will be empowering us. And they will be attracting the whole world to the Harinam Sankirtan movement. As Gauridas Pandit embraced Hriday Chaitanya, drenching him with his tears, Hriday Chaitanya fell at the feet of his Gurudev, surrendered his life in all humility. Together, they organized the wonderful festival. And today we are even almost 500 years later, through the process of hearing and speaking, we are also participating in that festival. On the transcendental platform, there is no difference between sound and the actual object describing that sound. Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasti Graha. Krishna is none different than his name. When we describe through parampara the beautiful pastimes of the Lord, in fact, not in theory, not in emotion, but in reality, whether we understand or realize it or not, it is a fact that that pastime is being enacted now. And all the benefits of being there present when it originally was enacted are ours. Prabhupada told a disciple, when I am speaking Bhagavad Gita to you, you are on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, sitting there in the presence of Krishna speaking to Arjuna. When we are fearing Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, or Krishna and Balaram, Radha Krishna's Leelas in Vrindavan, when we're hearing about the stories of the great Acharyas, we are there. If we can just appreciate that, and honor our good fortune, how much we will make benefit. Krishna is not different than the deity. They are standing before us. If we take them to be ordinary, they will appear ordinary. So this is why we come to Puni Yatra. This is why we come to Sadhu Sangam, to actually enter into the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, the only shortcoming is our own realization. Srila Prabhupada told us, if you are engaging in the Krishna conscious movement as I have instructed you, you are already liberated. You just haven't realized it. Through this beautiful story, we learn about the personal, loving exchange of the Lord and His devotees. Subal, one of the most intimate, loving cowherd boys of both Krishna Balaram and Radha and Krishna, appeared within this world in the form of Gauridas Pandit with the oar, of Lord Chaitanya, to carry us all back home, back to Godhead, just by appreciating and worshipping within our hearts His mercy and His pastimes. And this oar
as has been explained, has been shared through Parampara, through the ages, with all of us. Let us bow our heads at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, at the lotus feet of all those exalted devotees who are assisting Him in His mission, like Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, Chandramali Swami Maharaj, Bhakti Vishramba Madhava Maharaj, Chintamani Devi, Shukavaha Devi, and all the assembled Vaishnavas. Let us worship them, because in worshiping the Vaishnavas, we can be on that boat of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And with that oar, we will also be carried across the ocean of material existence. Vanshakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. I'd like to introduce you to a very dear elder god sister, Chintamani Devi Mataji. In 1972, when I had to leave Vrindavan because of visa complication, by the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, I found myself in New Vrindavan, living on a mountain. You had to walk up several miles of a mud road. There was a 150-year-old broken down little house that was a temple for a painting of Sadbhuja. That's all that was there. And Hayagriva Prabhu, his wife Shamadasi, their little baby Samba, Willow and Sky, who later became Kunti and Karnamrita, a devotee named Murari Gupta, and Adipati and his wife. They were the only ones living there. There was only about seven of us. And because nobody liked me at New Vrindavan, because I had just come from India and I had strange ways, the main community was at Bahulaban. But the first day I arrived, before I could even have darshan of the deities, they sent me up there. Even though nobody came to New Vrindavan, they were thinking that I was a bad influence. So they sent me up to the mountain with just a few people where nobody would ever see me. But I was so happy because that was the place that Prabhupada first lived for 1 month, in the same little broken down house. So I learned how to milk cows and I learned how to do gardening because there was nothing else to do. I remember they asked me to pull weeds. And I was coming from India where I was learning from Buddhists and sadhus, and I said, I will not pull weeds because they're living entities and it's violence to kill weeds. So my authority preached to me very strong that Krishna told Arjuna to kill in Bhagavad Gita. Said the flowers are like the Pandavas and the weeds are like the Kurus. If you don't kill them, that means you're on the Kuru side. If you're on the Pandava side, you have to kill these weeds because they're going to kill the Pandavas. So I was trying to surrender to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in a very practical way that I didn't expect. But I had my own way. I would put my mouth right to the soil, so my lips were really right against the earth. And as I
pull the weed out by its root, I would chant the Maha Mantra. And I was thinking that if the weed dies hearing the name of Krishna, he will get some benefit. So that was my service. And for Mangal Arati, there was just a few of us. Somebody would do a little arati to a painting. And one day, all alone, this devotee named Chintamani Devi came up, and she was carrying deities of Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra. She had her own deities. And she placed them on the altar. Now, finally, we actually had deities of Krishna, Balaram, and Jagannath. Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. And she became our head pujari. And she told us the story of those deities. Would you like to hear? It is an amazing story. One who hears this story with a receptive heart may just go back home, back to Godhead. We humbly request Chintamani Mataji to narrate the story for us. But before that, while they're bringing the microphone to her, let us all welcome her to the Pune Yatra. Hari Hari, if you can sit here, it's better. Yeah. Sukavaha Devi, you can also come here, please.
By Lord Jagannath's grace, and I feel overwhelmed right now. In Detroit, I'm the only Mataji in the ashram. I really wanted some sadhu sangha, and Lord Jagannath arranged for me to come here, and I've never been here before. And thank you for everyone. Thank you for your association. Which story are we talking about?
You can tell all the stories.
The one in Japan?
All the stories. Beginning in Japan.
Lord Jagannath came to me in Japan. I met Srila Prabhupada in 1969 and got initiated 5 days later in Columbus, Ohio. A few months later, got married, and a few months later, went to Japan to help open the temple in Tokyo. And I remember Lord Jagannath came in a box. I didn't know much about deity worship. We put them up on the altar, and they didn't have any clothes at that time. We gradually found out about worshiping them. And just like Maharaj was saying, Srila Prabhupada inspired us to do things we wouldn't ordinarily do. And We wanted to cooperate because we loved him so much. We were all different types of people, different types of bodies, different race, sex, different nationalities, but we wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. And I found that what pleased Srila Prabhupada was our sincerity in our heart, if we really tried. Even when we were going on Samkirtan, he said, give people the opportunity, whether they take a book or not, that's up to them. Just give them opportunity. And sometimes, I know there were times I didn't do something right, like I was supposed to draw a picture and it wasn't right. Prabhupada was shaking his head, no, that's not right. He said, you tried, that's all that mattered. If we do our best and we're sincere, Krishna will give us the ability to make advancement. So the Jagannath deities came. I still have them 40 years later. And I think the story he was talking about was in Japan. We had a very small little temple, and Prabhupada came to Japan 2 times because all the books were printed in Japan. If you look at the old books, it says Dainapan. They were printed in Tokyo. So that was wonderful that he came there. And we had a homemade altar. The deities were on the top shelf. There were two steps under Lord Jagannath. And when I first went there, there was only 3 of us, and we were going on Harinam every day, and we had a Sunday feast. A lot of people were coming. And one day I was cooking for Lord Jagannath, and I think then there was 4 or 5 people at the temple. They were on Harinam. Sudama and Bali Mardan and I think Borjan were on Harinam. And I was cooking. I was a little bit late, and if I remember this right, this was a long time ago, but I was wondering, is Krishna really eating this offering? As I was cooking, I was thinking, is he really eating this? Is it really true? And I was late for the offering. I heard a noise, and there was no one else in the temple. I heard this noise, thud, like this. And I just stopped for a second, and then I didn't hear anything else. I knew there was no one around, so I kept cooking. A minute later, I heard a noise, thud. And so then I got a little scared. Like, what? I looked in the front room and the back room, and then I looked in the temple room, and Lord Balaram was standing on the bottom shelf. And there's no way he could have fallen because it was a straight drop. And I went in. I had just dressed in that morning. The chain was across the altar, and no one else was. And I was just looking like, what are you doing down there? How did you get down there? And all of a sudden I started thinking, he's hungry. He's really eating. And so I got really excited. I put him back up and I said, okay, I'll go and finish cooking. I was like going really fast, and I brought the offering in, and then they came back from Harinam, and I said, guess what happened? I told them, and I still remember Sudama and Bani Radhan looked at each other like, your wife has gone crazy. But Borjan believed me. And a few things happened after that, too, so it wasn't just that one thing, and it wasn't just me. They seemed to be kind of active deities. But Krishna can do whatever he wants. You know, it really doesn't depend on... He's free. He's independent. If he wants to do something, he can do it. So, anyway, that's what appeared to happen. All I know is I don't know how he got down there, and I heard 2 noises, so I think he jumped twice. Is that the story? Is that it? There was one at New Vrindavan.
Please carry on.
You want to hear? Oh, I'm getting dehydrated.
Is there water?
I just got here last night. I didn't know I was going less than 1 week ago. Lord Jagannath sent me here. I'm not joking. I'm dressing the Jagannaths at the temple now, the big ones. Lord Jagannath sent me here. I was thinking I wanted to go to Pune. I was saying this last Saturday to someone, and the next day someone bought me a ticket that I hardly even know. Venkatavata brought me a ticket.
I remember.
And I didn't have a visa. And I had to leave Thursday, and Srinan had to drive me to Chicago in the snow. We couldn't see. It was dark. It was very dangerous. Krishna's mercy, I got here, but...
Srila Prabhupada told you about your relationship with Jagannath?
Oh.
And also you went to some temple and they criticized you about Jagannath?
Right, because...
And also... Go on.
Well, the way these marriages went when I joined, I was in the Los Angeles temple, the older La Cienega temple, and it was the big temple. Everyone did Harinam, and people at that time were getting married and just going all over the world to open temples. And at that time, Prabhupada was very happy with his household disciples. And people were getting married. They didn't even know each other. I had just joined the movement. I had no desire to get married at all. But everyone said, Prabhupada wants women to get married. So someone came up and said, do you want to get married? Because I want to go open a temple in Japan. True. And inside I was thinking, oh no, I don't. I said, ask Srila Prabhupada, because I really wanted to surrender. And all the women said, you've got to do it. And so then Prabhupada married us, and we went to Japan. And we couldn't speak the language, but Prabhupada said, don't worry, if your house is on fire, you can convey the message. So we didn't have any money. It was very cold. Everything I wanted to keep warm, I had to keep in the refrigerator in the winter. In the fourth place we moved, but... So what happened, the first time Srila Prabhupada came in about, I think it was 1971, he had just done the largest sannyas initiation. It was a really big thing in the early 70s to take sannyas. Some people had just gotten married and they were, can we take sannyas? Sometimes Prabhupada would say no because they just had babies and... You know, it's not an escape. It's got to be a good reason for it. So, but anyway, I guess my so-called husband was thinking about taking sannyas because the next time Srila Prabhupada came, he came out and said, I just asked Srila Prabhupada if I could take sannyas. Well, that was news to me. And Prabhupada said I had to give my permission or he wouldn't do it. And I thought for a minute, I said, okay. I didn't even know that much about it. Well, I found out I had to go to the nearest temple, which was Hong Kong, so that was my next stop. And so then somehow it was so cold in the temple that they had taken the Jagannaths and put them in a box, and they had these little Jagannaths on a heating pad on a low setting. I used to go look in the box to see how they were doing. So someone had the idea, bring these Jagannath deities to Hong Kong, where Borjan and Jagatrini were. And when I went, I brought them to Hong Kong. They have these wooden garlands, and Borjan was talking about sawing off these garlands so they could be easy to dress. And I was like, no, you can't do that. You're going to hurt them. He said, you're too attached. You should keep them. It wasn't really authorized by Prabhupada yet, but I kept them. From Hong Kong, another devotee decided to go open a temple in the Philippine Islands. So I had deities. I knew how to cook. So three of us went down. We opened that temple. And I stayed there until I got very sick and went back to New Vrindavan. But I passed through Los Angeles, where Srila Prabhupada was. At that time, Jaitirtha was the president. And everyone was saying, what are you doing? You've got Jagannath in a box. You're in the ashram. You're waving a carrot in front of him. And it's like, you know, you should just worship the deities in the temple. You shouldn't do this. And anyway, my husband had taken sannyas. This was, the deities meant everything to me. It was all I had. And so I was crying, and Jayatirtha said, we don't want to make you cry, but Prabhupada said this and Prabhupada said that. So we, in those days, we used to get to go up and personally have a darshan with Srila Prabhupada, and I had never really gotten the courage up to talk to him hardly at all, because I just like to watch him talk to other people, and he was so great that, you know, if I said anything, it would sound foolish anyway, so... But I had to go ask him about Lord Jagannath. This was very important. So I got the courage up and I brought the box up. It was a blue box with a lid, and only Prabhupada was in the room. And I came in the room, and I remember he asked me questions about the Philippine temple, and he gave me a piece of sandage. And then I got the courage up. I said, Srila Prabhupada, Lord Jagannath is in this box, and I want them to see you. And I opened the box and stood them up. And Srila Prabhupada had this big smile. He said, oh, they are gorgeous. Then he said, and then I said, Srila Prabhupada, everyone is telling me I shouldn't worship these deities. And he said, who's saying? And then I started to say, but Srila Prabhupada, you said, he just interrupted me. Never mind, he said. He said, you make Lord Jagannath your life and soul, and you will be happy your whole life. And then he said two times, so he said, so your husband's taken sannyas? And then two times he said, then you just make Balaram your son, Subhadra your daughter, and Lord Jagannath your husband. And then, I'm still trying to do that. And then... I actually wrote down everything he said right after that, so I remember exactly what it was. But at the end of the conversation, I said, Srila Prabhupada, is there any chance of me going back to Godhead? And he said, if you just do what I told you, you will become fully liberated, Krishna conscious, and go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. And, of course, anyone can get Srila Prabhupada's mercy by following his instructions. And just about 3 weeks ago, we have large Jagannath in Detroit. The Pujari, he left. And I found out he was leaving. I said, who's going to dress Lord Jagannath? I had never dressed large Jagannath before. It's quite different. So I volunteered. I said, why don't I do it? And I only had 3 days to learn, like, there's all these mantras, and their turbans are huge, and in Detroit they put, like, all these fans, and I was literally in tears the first time I tried to do it. I was thinking, why did I even volunteer? Because I couldn't get finished. The curtains had to open at 7:30, and those 2 hours went so fast. I'm still trying to stick pins in the turbans, and things are falling off, and I thought it was never going to happen. But actually, after 1 week, it started really getting to be nectar. And all these miracles have happened ever since I started dressing Lord Jagannath, just one after another. It's amazing. And in Detroit, we have had so much snow. It's been so cold. I've been sick the whole winter. I've had bronchitis. I haven't been able to get well. And early in the morning, because the ashram's across the street, you have to walk across the street, and it's really snowing, and I've been thinking about moving to India for about 2 years, and now I'm thinking, well, I've got a service now. I can't really leave the service. Forget about going to India, even for a visit. Because in my mind, I wanted to go to... I'm not joking. In my mind, I had this idea to go to Pune. I'd never been to Pune, but I met really nice devotees from Pune, and I said, I really want to go there and get some sadhu sangha. So this is what Lord Jagannath... This is totally what Lord Jagannath did. Just in less than 1 week, I was thinking of that verse, how as I was going through the miserable cold and the coughing and sick to address Lord Jagannath that if you're, if my misery makes you happy somehow, then that's supposed to be the highest bliss. So I got to try to think that way. And maybe I just won't go to India. And maybe I'll just try to think what will please Prabhupada, even though I had no association, I'm the only Mataji in the ashram. Maybe this is pleasing Prabhupada, so forget about going to India. So then, last Saturday, I was saying to a devotee named Krishna Shakti that I wanted to go to Pune. The very next day, I get a phone call from this couple that I only met one time, Vedanta Bhatta and Krishangi from New York. I know. They got my ticket. Anyway, they said, we've been thinking about you ever since we met you and you told Prabhupada stories, and we just felt like we had to call you and we just wanted you to get a ticket. The thing is, you got to leave Thursday morning. And I was like, oh, wow. I was thinking, who's going to do my service? Who's going to dress Lord Jagannath? Who's going to cook my offerings? But I thought, maybe this is Krishna's mercy. Now that I've actually surrendered to not going to India, maybe Lord Jagannath is going to let me go. It's like that. Sometimes you surrender and you just try to do your service, and then Krishna makes all these arrangements. So that very same day, the temple president, I said, should I go? And he had my whole service covered. I don't know who's doing it, but he said, I got your service covered. The only problem was I didn't have a visa. My passport was good for 6 months. And the visa, you had to go to Chicago. And I found someone. Well, I'm kind of like a vanaprastha. So my vanaprastha that lives down the street, he's got a really old car, and he said he would take me. And we had to go early. And the closer we got to Chicago, it was snowing. You couldn't see. The roads were snow. And it became a matter of life and death. Literally, sometimes you could not even see the road because of clouds. And I said, we can turn back. We were halfway there. I said, we can turn back if you want. But somehow we got there. I applied for the visa. They said, it's not guaranteed you'll get it. I come back later the day, got the visa, came back just in time to pack and get on the plane. Everything was just seemed like Krishna's mercy, but in the meantime, I'd gotten really sick, and the plane had turbulence, and like all these things were happening, like all these intense suffering conditions this whole week. And I was just thinking, Krishna, if this is purification, I want to slow it down a little bit, because it's really, just please let me get there and alive, because I don't want to disappoint these devotees after they bought a ticket. But I'm just saying this story to show how I feel like, you know, sometimes it's difficult. And as I wasn't born in India. I don't have a pious birth like most of you are born in India. And you don't have as much bad karma as I had. But so there's hope for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a woman. It doesn't matter if you're a man. It doesn't matter if you're old or young. All that matters, like Prabhupada said, it can take 1 second or it can take many lifetimes. We just have to make that decision to do our very best, to try our very hardest. I don't know even what that means, because we could always do better, of course. But Krishna, we take one step towards Krishna. He takes 100 steps towards us, and he will help us. And I'm not like the Maharajas here who have been very advanced devotees pretty much the whole time. I've had my ups and downs in Krishna consciousness, but I'm just saying that even though sometimes it may feel like this is very difficult or not, where's the reciprocation? Why do I have to suffer so much? So many things may happen. And then one day Krishna may just make miracles happen, because we just keep persevering and we just keep, you know, doing our very best. So, Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We welcome you to Pune.
Thank you.
Announcement? Let us all, after hearing all Chintamani Devi Mataji has done to make it here, we should really enthusiastically welcome her.
Hare Krishna.